I've jotted down some of the more shorter shilas, and we'll just run through. Let's start again. These are more shorter shilas. Let's go with a shila that came up a couple times this week, and that's the concept, at least just the concept, of not selling chametz gomer. So let me explain. The concept of selling chametz goes back to the Gemara. Obviously, there's a mitzvah to get rid of chametz. You have to get rid of chametz. You either have to mevatel, you do bedika, and then you mevatel it. Okay. Historically, the concept of selling chametz, at least historically, was much more of a smaller scale. It was you had some, you know, some chametz in your house. You gave it to the guy. You didn't get, take it back. It was gone. It was like a classic mechira. The real concept, though, of this type of mechira's chametz, I once heard from Rabelski in one of the shiurim that how it became much more popular was one of the professions that Jews were able to have despite all the anti-Semitism, which aren't you guys glad that's gone? Despite the anti-Semitism, was used to have a kretschma. They used to have a kretschma. Kretschma is Yiddish for they used to own like an inn with a bar. So barkeepers. They have whiskey and you can't get rid of it every year. That was their entire parnassus. So the concept sort of evolved that they would do a mechira. Because of this, I have to check. I have to find it again. But I'm fairly confident that Rav Belsky used to say, as I'm going to explain in a moment, there is a concept that many people do not sell chametz gomer. Even those that do not sell chametz gomer, Rav Belsky said, you could sell whiskey and schnapps and liquor because he says that's what it was. Now you could argue it originally was for someone who had a tremendous amount. That was his parnasa. But even for the average Jew, you have liquor. He felt that you could sell it. So what's the concept of not selling chametz gomer? The concept of not selling chametz gomer is basic. It's basically like this. There are questions with the mechira. What I mean is every aspect of the mechira, if you wanted to pull apart, you could. You could say, well, if it's a real mechira, why am I not taking it out of the domain? So the answer is we also lease the area under the chametz. There a lot of the kinyan in Bez Hashem this year, we're going to be doing a... First year, I'm going to be doing a mechira myself with Kenny. They do six kinyanim. Every kinyan is itself a shiloh, whether it works. You're doing six, it's pretty legitimate. There were people that questioned, oh, the whole thing is a harama, it's a game. Now, that was the argument. And therefore, because of this, rabbonim, there were some rabbonim that wanted to abolish it. I will say this, the shoyel umeshiv of Yosef Shel Notenzain, who was as big as it gets, he says that anyone who tries to mevatel it goyren ba, you should yell at them that it is mesayir of Klal Yisrael. It's done properly. It's done. It's a full fledged mechira. I'll explain in a moment. It has huge ramifications. A very, very interesting shayla that I'll get to in a moment. The point is like this: because of the whole question of just, you know, it feels a little bit like a game. There were rabbanim. Rav Aaron Cutler is quoted as feeling this way. There were people that did not sell chametz gomer, meaning they will sell taruvis of chametz, meaning they'll sell chametz that is mixed in, that there's no 60 times, so you can't eat it or own it over Pesach, but it's not biblically forbidden of bal yirah bal yimatza. Meaning, I actually, for anyone that wants, I printed out from the Star K, they have a whole list of different products of what's chametz gomer, what's not chametz gomer, what you could sell, what you can't sell, if anyone's interested. But the basic premise is that if something, at least this is their mahalach from Rav Heinemann, is that something that is aser d'oraisa for you to own on Pesach, bal yirah bal yimatza, they don't sell. If you're makbid, you don't sell. Things that are only a taruvis, meaning that there's not a kezayis b'chdei achilas pras, there just isn't batel b'shishim. So what's an example of not chametz gomer? I'll give you an example. Cake mix that's dry, pickles, salad dressing, vinegar from unknown sources, wheat germ, v'chule, there's a whole list. These items have chametz in them, but not the amount, it's not roiv, and therefore it's a taruvus of chametz, which according to the Magi Mishnah and other paiskim, even owning it is not biblically bal yirah bal yimatzah. So because the whole thing's derabbanon, for a derabbanon, we're not going to be super strict and we will rely on the mechira. This is if someone is particular. Not everyone is particular. I would say this. If someone is particular, beautiful. Continue being particular. Very good. This is an Yom Tov. that the Paiskim say, you don't make fun, this is people particular to get rid of chametz, very, very nice. However, if there is an extenuating circumstances where you cannot sell it, where you have to sell it, meaning, and normally you don't sell chametz kama, but this year you feel you should, so you do ataris nadarim, if need be, ask a shayla, and okay, whatever, it's a chumrah, it's a nice chumrah. But the one thing we should not do is to actually question the mechira. The mechira is a full-fledged mechira. The fact that the guy doesn't practically go into your home and take your stuff does not make it not a mechira. It's just because the guy is not interested. He could. He could legally go into your home and take it, and you would have no legal recourse to stop him. That's a full-fledged mechira. I'll tell you further. I once gave a shir on this, and the truth is we could probably do a whole shir b'fnei atzmai. One of the major controversial aspects in Eretz Yisrael, it was hugely controversial. In America, it's become much more controversial over the last couple of years. And that is, let's say you have someone in your family. I think I once gave a shir on this. You have someone who's not religious. So unfortunately, they're going to own chametz on Pesach. Now, that's a big avera, but that's between them and God. That's their sort of their problem. Here's the main issue. Chametz she'avar lava Pesach is a problem for everybody. So if they own Cheerios over Pesach, that doesn't just affect them, that affects you. Because now you bring your kids to grandma, and grandma's not religious, they can't eat any of the Cheerios or any of the pasta. It's a problem, because Chametz Shavalava Pesach is forbidden, you can't eat it. So the Paiskim say like this. Now, if you can get the parents to do a Mechira and not eat the Cheerios, meaning if you could be Mashpia on them and explain to them the importance that for 8 days they just don't eat the Cheerios, beautiful. And by the way, Matai v'Manoim, you should know, according to many Paiskim, if they're away for Pesach, you could sell it even without their knowledge, which normally you can't do, because normally selling it is considered, right, there's a rule in Gemara, Zachin la'adam shalai b'fanav, vein chavin la'adam shalai b'fanav, which means you could only do something without someone's consent if it's 100% a win-win. Now normally selling, if I just told you I sold your car without asking you, might be a win-win, you might be happy, you might be unhappy. That's the concept, that's not Zachin La'adam. So you generally cannot do a mechir without someone's consent. However, when it comes to chametz, they're not home anyway. And selling it avoids the prohibition of chametz shel Pesach. It's a win-win, it's for sure allowed. But here's the shaila. The ikar shaila is, what happens if they're going to eat the chametz on Pesach, can you still sell it? Meaning, you tell them you want to sell it, and they say, listen, you want me to sign a paper? I'll sign a paper. I'm still eating it. So the question is, does it work? And is it kedai? You see, the problem is, if you don't sell it, then they're over Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzah, and they're over Chametz Shel Pesach. If you sell it, then everything they eat, they're stealing. Stealing. Oh, exactly. So it's stealing, which is not good, but it prevents. So I'll tell you, in Eretz Yisrael, the Shita of Rishlaim Zalman Orbach, Ravad Yosef, Moshe Feinstein, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, is that sell it. They're going to eat it. It's still a valid sale. I mean, they asked Ramosha like this. There were shitas, by the way, I'll tell you very practically. Eda Charedis, Ramosha Sternbach, feels that not only is it not allowed, it undoes the sale. Because he says, if you sell something, knowing full well that you're not going to adhere to the sale, it's a game. And he feels that it's mevato the sale like gamri. And that's why in Eretz Yisrael, there were major chains that are owned by non-religious Jews that the Rabbanut convinced them to sell it, but they're still operational. So Eda Charedis feels it's mamish a game. But Rebelski also was not a fan of it. So okay, but you have Rav Moshe Feinstein, Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Avadya Yosef, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. They say no. And they ask Rav Moshe, what about undoing the sale? Rav Moshe says, in the laws of commerce, yeah, forget about Judaism, put that aside. I buy a car from you. We do all the kinyonim that are necessary to be legally binding, but in your mind, you're like, I'm going to drive the car. You know what it is? Doesn't matter. You sold it. It's a shtar. Kinyon kesef, kinyon setumta, kinyon chatzer, kinyon agav. These kinyonim work. The fact that you don't plan to adhere to it is irrelevant. Dvarim shevalev inu dvarim. So Moshe Feinstein feels that it is a good mechira. And he felt that it's advisable. The Rebbe used to tell people. Now, the reason why, so in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbanut, based on the following Rav Avadya Yosef, they do this. So in America, the reason why it became much, much a bigger issue the last couple of years was, I'm sure you guys heard about this, is that it used to be pretty simple. Chametz Shel Pesach was pretty simple, and that is, you had a store that had stuff, and they're either Jewish or not Jewish. They either sell or don't sell. And that was it. The problem is now, in America, it's much more complicated because it's not the store and the consumer, it's the distributor. And the distributors that actually own the product, because they're putting on the stores, it's consignment, I'm sorry, that's right. It's sold on consignment, which means that if you go into a Target, the products on the shelf are not necessarily belonging to Target. They're owned by the distributor, and then once they sell it, Target will then reimburse them and take a cut. That's a consignment, that's how it works. So it's not a matter of who owns the store, it's a matter of who owns the distribution. They found out recently, over the last 7 or 8 years, that, like, I have a list, but like 90% of the beers in America are owned by a Jewish distributor. A big problem. I don't have the list in front of me, but I can get it for you. It's as big of the beers as they come. These are not mom and pop. These are big, big beers. So the story goes that the first year, the OK, which is Chabad, they like stayed by his door. I've seen videos about this, where they tried to get him to sell it, and he's like, I'm not interested. The next year, he started selling. So Lomaisa, what happened is, he sells it, or at least he sold it. I don't know about recently, but like the last 5 or 6 years, he sold it, but it was still operational. So the OK, following the Rebbe, following Rav Moshe, following Rav Zalman, following Rav Yosef, said, okay, fine, it's sold. He's operational. So he's a ganav, but it's still. The Star K says it's not a good sale. It's not a new shaila. This is an old shaila. This is an old shaila that bichlal that has been affecting Eretz Yisrael for many, many years. It just came into America recently. So that's what it came up. Okay, again. So practically, when it comes to the beer, it's a machlekes. I will say this: Chamash Alva Pesach is derabanan. Generally, it's a chamad derabanan, but generally we deal with derabanans. You're allowed to rely on these paiskim. These are very, very big paiskim that you would be able to rely on. Well, my point is like this. Every sale, even if someone's not religious, right, and you sit down and he says, what do I have to do? And I said, well, we're selling your chametz. And he's like, all right. He signs it. He does the kinyan. He picks up the pen. Now, what are you concerned about? I'm not concerned about future actions because I don't know the future. I just know right now he's probably not buying in. But that's called dvarm shebelev. The usually way it works by kinyanim is you go by the maisa, hu ha'ikar. True, but the usual general rule is by kinyanim dvarim shebelev in dvarim, right? If you exactly, and the Rebbe always exactly, the Rebbe used to advise it because he said, and I think it's true with this distributor that it's like he's becoming more firm as he goes on. He says also very practically, you never know. Maybe by the way, you sell. Let's say stores are a bigger deal. Let's say a family member. You have a family member. You sell everything. What if one day he doesn't eat? So that one day, it's a good idea. That's the point. The Rebbe felt that it's a much advisable. It's a very, very good idea. I'm going to run through by the way, speaking of which, there are certain things that are not roi l'achila, and there's obviously no need to sell them. You could use them. I've mentioned this in the past. The last couple of years, the OU has become a little bit more lenient. They're makel with shampoos, soaps, cosmetics, toothpaste. They're makel with all these things. These things are not roi l'achila. The OU. Yeah, but they're still makel, if you ask them, they're still makel. It's always good to get a good Heksher toothpaste, to get Tom's and Maine, but they hold that it's all mutter. Okay, just to mention some other halachas that came up. So you asked me about the automated watch. It's very simple. The Shemir Shabbos Kilchos and in Perichav Ches, Ois Nan Zayin writes as follows. The major halacha is that when it comes to watches on Shabbos, I'm not talking about Erev, I'm just talking about winding them and all these things. The basic premise is that the Poiskim look at a watch that does not work, or that's not working right now as a broken kli, and making it work is considered potentially a biblical form of fixing. Therefore, if let's say you have a watch that stopped working, and you need to wind it, winding it would be aser, for sure. If you were to have a watch that stopped, and it's solar powered, to power it solary would be a problem. To automatic watch, to wind your hand would be a problem. But Shlom Zalman Shita is that once it is working, you are allowed to wear it, even if your movement will continue to cause it to continue. That's not doing anything. Keeping it status quo once it's working is not considered tikkun. It's tikkun as opposed to seiser, boina seiser. So therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman Shita is that once it is working, you could wear it even though you're outside and there's a solar power, it's fine. Even though you're moving your hand and knowing full well, he says, even if you're mechavin for this, Rav Shlomo Zalman is mechavin. That's Rav Shlomo Zalman Shita. Yeah, obviously, you can't make it light up. You can't click buttons. If it lights up, I wouldn't wear it. I wouldn't wear anything that's lighting up. But if it's a regular watch, just based on the fact that automated movement, it continues the battery power, that's not an issue, the Paiskim say. Photo-grade lenses are for sure okay, the Paiskim are makel, even though the fact that when you go outside, it turns into sunglasses. When you go back inside, it's no longer. That's tseveya, temporary. A Paiskim are completely makel for that. When it comes to a watch, I don't know. If it works like this, I don't know. So just to mention some other quick halachas, I'm sorry. So I was asked this. I just want to clarify because there's certain halachas, like especially this year, I'm not trying to get into all the details. I'm just trying to make awareness. One of the, unfortunate side effects is there's a reality where people break engagements. I just want to clarify one point because someone asked me, and I think it's important because some people know about this, some people don't. So when people unfortunately have a broken engagement, there's majorly one halacha in that they should be aware of. And that is, there was an old cherem, there was an old, ban, excommunication, against breaking an engagement. Now, obviously, the answer is, you only break an engagement if you really have to. So, you're still going to break an engagement. No one's going to tell you should have an unhappy marriage because there's a ban. But, the Rama writes that to remove this ban, you need both parties to be meichel each other. And this is why there's a concept called a shtar mechila. A shtar mechila means that the party that broke up with the other party receives a letter saying that they forgive them. So let's say the chassan breaks up with the kala, dumps the kala. The kala would then write a shtar to the chassan saying, I forgive you. There's no real formal text. The basic text is, I officially forgive you. We don't owe each other anything. You go on your own. That's the basic premise. It's an important thing to do. And then people always ask, what if you don't really mean it? Try to get to the point where you mean it a little bit. It's important. It's important. I'm not saying that you're ever going to get to the point where you don't want to wait till your mamish, bishalom, and achdus, because that could take years. It's important. It's not just ayin hara. It's first of all, there is Kabbalistic heebie-jeebie stuff, but also just practically, it's an official closure. Chazal want there to be closure for this couple. Ramesh Sternbach used to, practically, if he would be Masada Kedushin, by a couple that was previously engaged, had a broken engagement, he would ask, do you have a shtar mechila? He would want to see it. There were rabbanim like this. It's an important thing. I'm telling you, it's important. There were rabbanim that felt it's very important, and it's something that, my point is, it's not just one of these things that if you sometimes say, I'll get calls and be like, this rabbi told me this, is this something he's making? It's not made up. A shtar mechila is an important thing to do. I'm not saying that, it's important. It's important. It's something you should push yourself to do, again, just ma'orah the tzibur. So the engagement is, the Paiskim say, Ramosha Shita is, that the engagement nowadays is when you tell your friends you're engaged. As he says, it's not, it doesn't mean like, listen, by Hasidim, it's when they do a Tanoim. We don't do Tanoim by non-Hasidim or whatever people do. It's when you call and you say Mazel Tov, and your aunt saw you at only Simchas and Simchas Spat, and then the engagement is broken, and you have to tell people it's an embarrassing, it's a very unpleasant thing. Part of the reason why they need a shtar mechila is because the process of a broken engagement, everyone talks about it, which is a sad side effect of that people are not careful with Lashon Hara the way they should. Everyone's talking about it, and once the word is out, does it have to be officially you get a ring? No, it's when you tell people that your intent is to be engaged. And when the word spreads, the word spreads. Okay, a couple things just to run through that came up. One is, we've had it in shul three times this week or twice this week. And I know that it's not a popular opinion. There's like a very popular thing to get rid of tachanun. That's like a big thing in shuls. If you can get rid of tachanun, it makes people very happy. Even though it's such a strange thing because tachanun is like, it's such a chush of a tefillah. The Indian of tachanun, the Sfarim say the reason why you fall over is because it's like you're falling on the ground, being moiser nefesh. This form, the Rishonim describe it as like shtapchus anefesh, that you're saying to Hashem, listen, I give up my life for you. It's like mamshel kibusir nefesh. But anyway, so this week we had twice that people were getting married that day, so they came over to the bal tefillah and they said like no tachan tonight. I was like, I was in middle shmos. I'm like, huh? And because one time. One time I was in Middle Shemoneh Esrei, I don't know if he's listening, but I don't know if he listens to these stuff, but I was once in Shemoneh Esrei, and part of if you want things, not here, but if you want things to get done in certain shuls, so sometimes it's just confidence. You just walk up there and you just sound confident. You don't have to have any knowledge to back you up. So I was davening Shemoneh Esrei, and a guy went to the bima and he clapped on the bima, and he said, "It's Zayin Adar. There's no Tachan. Moshe Rabbeinu's Yartzei." So I'm davening Shemoneh Esrei. So I can't like. So the Baal Tefillah just said Kaddish, and then so after I finished my essay, someone looked at me like, "No, I would say Tachan and Zayin Adar. I'm not aware of a makar not to do that." So my lesson was, I think Moshe Rabbeinu would want us to say Tachan, but the person said to the Baal Tefillah, "There's no Tachan because the Chasim." So I'll tell you like this: there are shitas. I'm not going to say it's made up. There are shitas that hold. We know that obviously during the week of Sheva Brachas, there is no tachanun for the chasan if they're in the shul. You mentioned that some people didn't go to shul, they would step out in certain keels. But the point is, if the chasan's in the room, there's no tachanun during Sheva Brachas. He's not a chasan yet. This is the day of his chasana. There were shitas that held that if he is getting married that day, by the way, not after Shkia, I'm saying he's getting married before Shkia, there were shitas that held that if he's getting married 6 o'clock in the afternoon, you don't say tachanun in the morning. However, that is not the accepted psak. Reb Chaim Kanievsky felt very strongly that he said nagua oilam to say tachanun. Reb Shlomo Zalman said not only does the shul say tachanun, the chasan says tachanun. The only time I will say this that is pretty much accepted not to say tachanun before the chasana is the mincha at the wedding hall when the chasan's about to get married and they're davening mincha. You don't say tachanun, and the reason for that is because at the wedding hall it's considered the base chasan. It's considered like a makam of simcha. You don't say tachanun. But if he's going to get married that day, pashtus, you say tachanun. And this overall is a shita that the Chazanish used to hold and other pesukim used to hold. And it's actually counter, it's sort of a misconception. It goes into that misconception list of shirim that we once gave. And that is, you're not a chasan until you're married. I know that's not a chiddush. But what most people are aware of, one of the things that you'll ask a friend to do is the day of your wedding, can you be my shomer? Okay. That's what you do. By the way, listen, if you're a friendly guy and you're approachable, you might get tasked with being someone's shomer. The truth is, me'ikr hadin, there's no chiv of shmira until you're a chosen. Where it comes from is the Gemara says, those people that need shmira are a chosen. A chosen is during sheva brachas. Before the wedding, there's really no inin. What it is a minig of chasidim. It's a chassidish minig that the day of the chasana, you need shmira. It's a thing. But be'ikar adin, you're not a chasin yet. And that's why the Chazanish and Reb Chaim Kanievsky used to say, you don't need shmira because you're not a chasin yet. I'll take it a step further. Now, again, shmira is, people do it, keep it up, keep it going. But my point is that you're not a chasin for hilchas chasanim, it's after the wedding, not before the wedding. I'll say this a step further. Soloveitchik took it a step further. He felt very strongly of the shita. And Soloveitchik, he felt, you know, one of the minhagim, it's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, that there's a minig to put ashes on the head of the chasen. Generally, the minig is that they do it before they walk down the aisle. They usually go into a side room, and they put ashes on the chasen's head. Rav Soloveitchik would do it under the chuppah. And the reason for that is, he says, you put it, the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, is you put it on the roish al chasen. He's not a chasen until he walks down the chuppah. So Rav Soloveitchik would do it under the chuppah, and that's the minig of many YU Rabbanim who are telling me the Rav Soloveitchik, they'll do it under the chuppah. It has to do with the shita. So practically, I would say tachanun, despite him being married, getting married that day, I would still advise saying tachanun. That's the shita of Reib shitas, and I definitely think it's the proper approach. Meaning, a chasen cannot leave his house during Sheva Brachos alone. And the reason why it's not as common in people's minds is because he's usually with his kala. Right. Yes. But conceptually, during Sheva Brachas, a chasan and kala, if he goes to shul, he gets someone to go with him. He should not travel alone. He should not travel alone. There is a shita of the Chazanish that he held that going to a mitzvah, dvar mitzvah, he'll be protected, so going to shul not. But pashtus, the shmira is that a chasan and kala during Sheva Brachas require shomrim. They're shomer each other. And that's why it's not as practically in people's minds. But a chasan during Sheva Brachas and a kala during Sheva Brachas requires shmira. Like I said, if they're ever leaving the house alone, if she needs to go to Amazing Savings, she should get someone to go with her. That would be the concept. This is a halach I mentioned Friday night, but I always like to record it if possible, about eating matzah balls, this tekufa. I mentioned that when I was in Shara Torah, the bachrim, I think the bachrim would cook the food, and some of the bachrim would stop making matzah balls already now, this time period. I just want to clarify what this point is. There's a Isser Derabbanan, there's a rabbinic prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach. The reason why Chazal did it is because they know that Erev Pesach, you can't have chametz anymore, and therefore if you can't have chametz, what are you going to eat? You're going to eat matzah. The problem is Chazal knew that if you stuff yourself with matzah Erev Pesach, you're not going to have any cheshik to eat matzah during the Seder. In order to make it satisfying to you, they forbade eating matzah on Erev Pesach. There's a minig, that's Erev Pesach. There's a minig that extends it from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. I think that's more of a common minig. And there's even more obscure minig to stop from Purim. That already from Purim, some people don't eat matzah, but the more common, if you're not sure what your minig is, if I were to bet, your minig is probably either just Erev Pesach or from Rosh Chodesh on. So with that, what type of product are you supposed to stop eating? The Poskim generally say if because the whole purpose of not eating matzah on Erev Pesach is in order for you to be excited for matzah, it's pashtus only extended to the type of matzah that you could be yoitz of the mitzvah. Now that being said, while there are Poskim that feel that all matzah products that are baked should be avoided, so there are Poskim that feel, I'll give you an example, you have egg matzah, right? Egg matzah, you can't be yoitz of the mitzvah unless you're a chayla. There were some Rabbanim that felt that Erev Pesach, you shouldn't eat egg matzah. I understand that. But a matzah ball, the overwhelming majority of Poskim feel that you could eat that even on Erev Pesach. Why? Because a matzah ball, you're not mekayim the mitzvah anyway. The definition of bread or matzah is baked. Once something is boiled, it's not a shame lechem. It's not toyer lechem. And therefore, the bracha is never hamaitzi if something's boiled. So Erev Pesach, if you want to say you want to be makbid, fine. Rav Shitas will tell you you could have a knedel Erev Pesach. But this minig of extending it back to Rosh Chodesh, even Purim, it's not niskabel that minig is to asa this. And therefore, even though there is a point where you stop eating matzah, pashtus, you could still have knelach up to that, up to Erev Pesach. I got a shayla this morning. I'll tell you three more and then we'll stop. Almost done. I got a shayla this morning. If someone who's in Avelus, could he serve as Panim Chadoshes at a Sheva Brachas? We generally, during Avelus, we avoid, you know, these type of festive meals. So generally, it would be advisable not to go to Sheva Brachas. Most Avelim are not going to go to Sheva Brachas. The problem is, he's asked to be a Panim Chadoshes. So is that, does that make it mutter? So Rav Shlomo Zalman Shita and other Poskim, Rav Saroy Deblitzky and Saveh Smachos and other Poskim, they feel that a Avel can serve as a Panim Chadoshes at the Sheva Brachas meal. That's fine. The question is, though, do they eat? So Rav Saroy Deblitzky says, it depends whether Panim Chadoshes generally have to eat. Forget about Avelos. You're a Panim Chadoshes at someone's Sheva Brachas. Must you partake in the meal to officially be the Panim Chadoshes? The Shita is, in general, forget about Avelos, the Shita is that the Ramah, I don't have to tell you about the Ramah, and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, they feel that you do not have to eat to be a Panim Chadoshes. Now, the Sefer Berech Es Avram, It's an older sefer. It's not. I'm not saying it's the Rama, but there's a sefer. He felt that you should eat bread to be panim chadashas. So for the average, if you're not an avelus, we would advise you if you're going to be panim chadashas anyway, eat the bread, and if you're not going to eat bread, at least have mezainis. Eat something, because while we obviously follow the Rama and the kitzer, it doesn't hurt. The Ramah and Kitzur are not saying that it's bad to eat. They're just saying you don't have to. But in this case, when it comes to Avelus, where now you're partaking in a festive meal, which is generally forbidden, the Poskim seem to say that it's better to go and not to eat. So if an Avel is going to serve as Panim Chadoshes, it's probably advisable for him to go, not actually eat at the meal. Even the Lashon of Rav Saroy is Noichach Eitzel Hasuda. He doesn't say to eat, just be present. So I would advise going but not eating. That's what it seems like. Two more shilas, and then I'll just finish up with this. Two more shilas. I was going to talk about this Friday night, but I got distracted and I went with the Canadian one. Someone asked me, are you allowed to use Meisr money for Chinese auction tickets? Okay, so it's interesting. So you have Meisr money. Can I use Meisr to buy a Chinese auction? If anyone's not familiar with the Chinese auction, they have these tickets. $10 a ticket, and you put them in, and then they pull put one of the numbers, a winning ticket. So Rav Moshe Shita, this is in Arach Igris Moshe Chelik Dalet Sim Ayin Vav Isbeis. Rav Moshe Shita is as follows: there's two different types of Chinese auction tickets. He's mechalik like this: if there's a certain amount of tickets sold, and then they stop. Sometimes you'll have it with like the $100 raffle tickets, to get a house in Eretz Yisrael. There's a limited amount. There's only 50 tickets. Rav Moshe felt that if there's a limited amount, you shouldn't use Maisa money, because then you're buying, it's sort of more commerce, because there is a percentage. You're buying a percentage amount, a statistical percentage to win. He felt that that was more mekach u'memkar and should be avoided. However, as someone who's run a Chinese auction, the classic Chinese auction, where it's infinite. People, like, you'll come over. I used to run the Chinese auction, Hashivenu. People will be like, God, I dropped my ticket. I'm like, oh, take it. I don't care. Just, like, I have thousands. It doesn't matter. They're ether. It doesn't. Chinese auction tickets, classically, there's no statistical probability. I can give out as many as I want. It's pure tzedakah, meaning it's not a limited amount. It's not a limited supply. I can give out as much as I want. Therefore, Rav Moshe looks at it as pure tzedakah. You're not buying any percentage. You're not buying anything. It's pure tzedakah. It's just that practically tzedakah organizations, to incentivize giving tzedakah, they want to give a gift. And the truth is, they could just hand it out to a random. They could just say, you get it. But that'll cause people to be upset. This is a way to do it, a way to just give out a gift without offending people. It's not commerce. People, like, in people's minds, like, oh, I want this. You'll watch for Chinese auctions. They'll be like, should we get this for the kitchen? It's like, you're not getting, you're not winning this. I'm giving out thousands of tickets. Nobody's winning this anyway. So the point is, that Rav Moshe felt is fine. But Rav Moshe did say that if you win, you should reimburse the value of the ticket. So let's say it's a $10 ticket. You spent $1,000. One of the tickets won. So you should spend $990 for Maisa. The $10 ticket, you should reimburse. That was Rav Moshe Shita. Listen, our paiskim that are chaylik, but you have to realize, the obligation to give Meiser money, according to Rav Shittas, is a minig. That's a very strong minig, but the Tzitz Eliezer has a whole arichas in Chelik Tes, the beginning of Chelik Tes, he has a whole kuntras on it. He explains that Pashtus, the Shita of the Bach, is what we follow, and that it's a minig. Once it's a minig, like I said, it's a strong minig, like wearing a yarmulke. But a minig it is. And therefore, it's not the Raisa, not the Rabbanon, it's a minig to give Meiser money, and therefore, because it's just a minig, we definitely could rely on Rav Moshe. That seems to be the accepted approach when it comes to Chinese auction tickets. No, so actually, buying svarim with Meiser money is a very old shaila. The Taz talks about it. The problem is, the Taz is not bothered. You're allowed to get benefit from, if your ikar kavan is to give tzedakah, and the fact that you're getting a side benefit, that the Taz says is fine. Vaharaya, you buy aliyahs, right? You're buying aliyahs, you're spending Meiser money, you're getting the benefit of getting aliyah, but that doesn't bother. The problem is, buying a sefer, that might be considered more commerce. So the Taz says, it might be okay, but you have to write on it that it's not mine, it's anyone wants to use it. It's a little bit more frowned upon nowadays, because nowadays it's not like it used to be where you leave it in the shul. You buy a sefer from Meiser money and you leave it in your den and you just wrote on it, anyone could use it. Who's getting it? But that was an old shaila of whether you could use Meiser money for svarim. The Taz talks about it. That seems to be maybe a bit of a separate shaila. So Rav Moshe felt that wasn't necessary. There were pricing that felt. Rav Moshe felt just reimbursed the ticket, and it was more just for optics. It's like, you shouldn't have, you know. Really, Rav Moshe, I think, holds Be'etzim, you don't even have to reimburse the ticket. But it's a nice thing, he says, to reimburse the ticket to you. You feel like you didn't, you know, didn't use Meiser money to buy the ticket. Last shaila, I'll end with this. The last shaila is, I always like to mention the shaila just because, you know, people will listen. I'll end with this. There's, in general, one of the halachas of the Seder, although very, very bekitzer, one of the halachas of the Seder, one of the more famous shailas, is wine or grape juice. A very famous shaila. And you had opposite extremes. Rav Moshe Feinstein famously held that while you generally can use grape juice for kiddush, but the inyan of the Seder is cheres. Cheres is alcohol, and therefore it has to be wine. That was Rav Moshe Shita. Rav Soloveitchik held the exact opposite. He said cheres is drinking what's comfortable for you. And if you prefer grape juice, and that's cheres. Okay, so you had different viewpoints. You had opposite sides of the spectrum. But here was the shaila they asked Rebelski, and I always like to mention it because I think it's fascinating. Rebelski was asked, let's assume that you're makbid on wine, on alcohol. You follow Rav Moshe Shita. How much alcohol does it have to have? Could you use kedem kal? So Rebelski had a very clever answer. Rebelski said that anyone who knows how to make wine knows that wine will not ever be more than 14 or 15% alcohol. The only time you'll get wine that's more than 14 or 15% alcohol is if it has added alcohol in it. Natural alcohol, the yeast and the enzymes will die at 14% alcohol. It will not get more than that. As Rebelski says, fine. So think about it. The Gemara tells us that the wine of the Gemara was three parts water, one part wine. If you take 14% alcohol and you dilute it, three parts water, one part wine, you have 3.5% alcohol. See, he says the alcohol of the Gemara was kedem kal. And he says, the Gemara, the alcohol used to get them drunk. He says, it's not that it was more alcoholic. It was just that I guess someone mentions the sugar, it went straight, meaning it hit them. It hit them harder, but it was actually kedem kal. So 3 or 4%, Rav Belsky felt, is for sure yoitza, this chumra of Moshe, definitely. But in general, listen, it's a general shaila. Try to have wine if you can, but if it's mamish ruined, you can mix grape juice with wine, so you get the alcohol content, but it doesn't get you sick. But the general shaila, if you're makbid on wine, kedem kal is definitely acceptable. That's Rav Belsky Shita.